Welcome everybody to our session on the Angels of God. This is being recorded for christadelphianvideos.org and my name is Ron Cowie from South Australia. Angels, those that stand by. This is study 14 and we're continuing our theme of being made equal unto the angels. As we pointed out at the start of every study, we're looking at three reasons to study the angels, and particularly now the second one, to gain a vision of our promised immortal nature of being made equal to the angels. And we have dealt with some aspects already in the previous session. But moving on about what it is to be equal unto the angels. We want to talk now about the glorious bodies that angels have and the brilliance that emanates from them. And this is because they are totally motivated and enlarged and enlivened by the Spirit of God, the powerful force of God's nature. His special spirit powers are what sustains them and makes their bodies exist. They don't work on the principle of food and blood and oxygen like we do. Their whole bodies are sustained by the power of God. And when they reveal their bodies in their natural condition, then they are creatures of great angelic brilliance. Now, sometimes they do this to scare people. This is the occasion of the resurrection of Christ. It says, "Behold, there was a great earthquake. The angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat upon it. His countenance was like lightning, and his raiment white as snow. And for fear of him, the keepers did shake and became as dead men." Now, that's in Matthew 28, verse 2. Now, I want to just toss out a little teaser for you to think about. It says there, when the angel had rolled back the stone, he sat on it. And there are only three occasions in the Bible you find an angel sitting down. Almost always the angel is standing. But there are three occasions you find an angel sitting. And in every case, there is a genuine reason for that difference. So the angel sat on the stone, but notice the description of the angel. His countenance was like lightning. This is like seeing a welding flash constantly, like having a bolt of lightning in your room. So anyone that saw them was immediately traumatized, made unconscious by the very power of that experience. His raiment was as white as snow, so blinding whiteness. And for fear of him, the keepers did shake and became as dead men. So they lapsed into unconsciousness by the very brilliance of that angel. It was very similar on the hills of Bethlehem when the angel came to inform the shepherds about the birth of Christ. "Lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid." And you can imagine as the whole night sky was lit up by the many angels that came, particularly when the first one came. This was just one angel that they first saw. After that, they saw a whole heaven filled with angels singing and rejoicing. In the case of Peter, when the angel came to rescue him from prison, the prison was filled with light, and again the keepers became as dead men. So you have this dramatic brilliance of the angels that they can actually show when they choose to do so. Now, I want you to come back with me to Exodus 24, because in Exodus 24 we have a dramatic occasion where a number of people from Israel had the privilege of meeting the angels and especially seeing the Yahweh angel himself. It wasn't many times that the Yahweh angel appeared to anyone except to Moses. He once appeared to Miriam and to Aaron, but generally the Yahweh angel came to Moses only, and they met in a tent of meeting. But on this occasion, there was a revelation to the priesthood and to the elders, the 70 elders of Israel. We read about them going up to the top of Mount Horeb. Verse 9, "Then went up Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu." And you can see, can't you, then why those two were later slaughtered by God, because they had the most amazing privilege to see the angels of God face to face and then got drunk. And the 70 elders of Israel were there as well. They saw the Elohim of Israel. In other words, they saw the angelic host. The Elohim there, of course, is a plural word. There were many Elohim there. They saw the Elohim of Israel, but they saw one in particular, because it now changes to a singular. "And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as it were, the body of heaven in its clearness." When that Yahweh angel walked in the midst and came before the people standing there, a dramatic thing happened. Everything under his feet became like a paving, so it became flattened out. And that's what the glory of the Yahweh does. It actually lowers the mountains and raises the valleys, and it makes everything at a level. So it became as a paved work. And it was translucent sapphire, blue. So looking right down, it's like looking into a mountain made of clear blue glass. And it was as the body of heaven in its clearness, and it should be in its brightness. So it was incredibly bright, shining bright blue all the way down through that mountain. And that was the impact of the glory of that angel. You see it again in verse 17. The sight of the glory of Yahweh was like a devouring fire on the top of the mountain. So here's an angel that actually has a tremendous majestic glory that is so brilliant. And, you know, you can see how these people are watching this magnificent angel. Wherever he walked, like a paving stone under his feet, and it became like clear glass down as far as they could see. No wonder we find in Numbers 15, verse 38, that the children of Israel were commanded to put a fringe of blue upon their garments. They had to learn to walk with the angels. And that's why they wore that ribbon of blue. It was a symbol of them walking in heavenly places with the angels of God. A wonderful thing what they saw, but it was an incredibly remarkable vision. Well, then we find that this magnificent angelic being occurred on a number of times. In Exodus 34 and verse 5, Yahweh came down in the cloud. This is when Moses said, "Show me your glory." And he came down and he stood with him there. Again, that idea of the angel coming and standing and waiting with Moses. We know that Moses saw a tremendous vision as that angel passed by. You could only see the back part of that glory. The angel covered him in the cleft of the rock with his hand. And when Moses came out of that experience and came down the mountain, his whole face radiated. It's like he'd been through a nuclear experience. His face shone while he talked with them. He had put a veil upon his face. And again, Exodus 34 says that. His face was shining so brilliantly from the reflected, radiated light he got from that angel that he put a veil upon his face. And when he went up the mountain, that sight also was always up there like the devouring fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. So angelic beings, and particularly the Yahweh angel, are incredibly magnificent, powerful, brilliant, glorious beings when they are revealed in their natural condition. There are other times when angels choose to reveal themselves in a way that teaches lessons. So the angels can have themselves seen in the way they wish to be seen. I'll explain this, how they do this, a bit later on. But if they want to be seen in fire, so fire indicates judgment. Fire indicates warning. So in the Garden of Eden, God placed at the east of the garden a cherubim and a fiery sword, a flaming sword that turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. And we know that it was to preserve the way to life. It wasn't to cut them off. It was to preserve the way to life. But there was an angel of judgment there. And that angel appeared in a certain way. It appeared with cherubic faces because there were the lessons they had to learn that they might gain access to the tree of life. And without going into the subject of the cherubim, wherever you see a cherubim appearing in person like that, then it was an angelic manifestation being seen as they wished to be seen to teach a particular lesson. In the case of Elisha, the young man at Dothan, Elisha prayed and the young man saw the chariots of fire round about Elisha. There are no stables in heaven. There are not chariots in heaven. What was seen was that it was seen an army, and there was the manifestation of an army around about Elisha. And that was a reassurance that the angels of God were camped all around Elisha on that occasion. So angels are seen as they wish to be seen. The angel of the fire of sacrifice of the parents of Salmon went up in the fire. The angel in the burning bush, it was the way he wished to be seen. He wanted to make the lesson that, you know, though they would be in the fires of affliction in Egypt, that Israel would be preserved. The bush was not consumed. You also find in Isaiah 6 that in vision they appear as seraphim, and that means fiery ones. And so you have angels that appear particularly encased in fire because judgment was pending upon Israel at that particular time. So you have the manifestation of angels in fire, which is why it says in Psalm 104, God maketh his angels spirits, his ministers, his servants, a flaming fire. So often they appear in fiery manifestations. Sometimes they come with a sword drawn. The cherubim had a fiery sword. So again, there's a symbol of impending judgment. When Joshua met the Yahweh angel just before the Battle of Jericho, he was there with a sword in his hand, again telling Joshua the time of judgment had come. When the angel judged Balaam, the angel came and appeared with a sword to condemn that wicked man Balaam for his actions. When the angel in the days of David stood over Jerusalem to bring upon it the plagues that God had decreed, then the angel stood there with a sword. And again, there was a symbol of judgment impending. Not that angels have sword racks in heaven. They don't go and sharpen their swords. They weren't literal swords, but they were seen and chose to be seen carrying a sword, that the lesson might become obvious. So why aren't the angels visible all the time? Well, as we said, you see that great host of armies above the mountains there, the gold part of that picture. All around about Elisha, there was these millions and millions of chariots around about Elisha. So why aren't the angels visible all the time? Well, it's part of God's plan that people should have a degree of faith. And that was why they actually had to, at times, not be seen. Now, I want you to come to Luke chapter 24, because in Luke 24, we have a wonderful key to the way that angels can be seen in certain ways, or when they choose not to be seen, that they can conceal themselves from us. This is when the Lord Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, is walking on the road to Emmaus with Cleopas and probably his wife. And it says, it came to pass while they communed and reasoned together. So they're having an argument on the side of the road. Jesus drew near and went with them. And this is very clear. Their eyes were holden that they should not know him. Now, they saw a person. They talked to a person. They asked questions of the person. It says in Mark 16 that he appeared in another form. So what they saw was not the Jesus they knew. They saw an individual. They saw a person, but they did not recognize him. Why didn't they recognize him? Their eyes were holden. They saw something that did not register in their brains as being the Lord Jesus Christ until he chose to reveal himself later on. How was that resolved? Well, it was very quickly resolved when they were in the house. It says their eyes were open and they knew him. So now the connection that they should recognize him was made, because their sight was now affected, or their brain was affected to make them recognize him. And no sooner had they recognized him, he vanished out of their sight. And the margins got it correct. He ceased to be seen by them. It didn't mean that he vaporized. He didn't disappear. What it means is that immortal beings can affect the eyes or the brains of mortals. They can determine how they wish to be seen or to be not seen at all. That explains how Jesus was in the same room as the disciples, but not seen being there with them. This is the correct explanation of sudden appearances and disappearances. And this is critically important in doctrine. When you come to talk to Jehovah's Witnesses and they have a theory of angels being invisible spirit creatures, in other words, having no bodily existence, they have to explain the sudden appearances and disappearances of angels as dematerializing or materializing. And that's their theory. And they say the same about Jesus, that Jesus could dematerialize or materialize, because they don't believe Jesus has got a body at all. They can't explain what a glorious body is, but they say Jesus does not have a body because that was the price of redemption. And their wrong doctrine on the atonement ends up with a very weird philosophy about immortal beings being able to suddenly materialize or dematerialize. It's got nothing to do with it. It's all about their power to hold the eyes of mortals and to only be seen as they wish to be seen. And that's an important thing that we need to understand. Great example of this at work, of course, is in the case of Balaam. This is always the one to use on Jehovah's Witnesses because they don't even know the story, let alone the meaning of it. But, you know, here's Balaam going on a mission that he was told not to do. And three times the ass tries to save him by running into a wall or going off the road. And eventually it says, then Yahweh opened the eyes of Balaam and he saw the angel of Yahweh with his sword drawn. And what he had not seen, and what the ass had seen, was that the angel had been there all the time. Now, this completely destroys the Jehovah's Witness theory about dematerializing, because the ass saw something. The ass saw the angel three times. Balaam didn't see the angel. So, you know, God gave him one last chance through the pleading of the ass. When an ass talks to you, you should take notice, because that's rather an unusual thing to be happening. God gave him one last chance through the faithful ass to try and save him from his stupidity. In the end, the angel had to confront him. And from then on, Balaam was used in the purpose of God, and he had lost his hope of eternal life. So You know, quite clearly, the ass saw the angel, but Balaam didn't, until the point came where the angel revealed himself by changing the sight recognition in Balaam. So it's a very clear thing, isn't it? Just going over it again, you know, they're not dematerializing, disappearing immortals. Yahweh opened the eyes of Balaam. Same with Elisha, opened his eyes. Yahweh opened his eyes and he saw what other people could not see. And that's the great thing about the angels, that they are there all the time, but we don't always see them. And that's explaining how it's done. It's affecting the eyes or the brains of mortals so that they see what they wish us to see. So we have a lot of cases where angels are seen just sometimes vanishing. But there are other times when they actually are seen going. And these are quite significant. You can make a list of them, which we have here, where the angel actually is seen leaving. Numbers 12, the anger of Yahweh was kindled against Aaron and Miriam, and he departed. And you can imagine what it would be for them to have the Yahweh angel turn his back on you and walk away, leaving Miriam a leper. And, you know, this was a great sign of heavenly disapproval that the angel walked away from them. He left off talking with Abraham and God went up, or the Elohim went up from Abraham. So again, Abraham saw the angel go back to heaven. Abraham knew then that that angel had come from heaven to deliver that message. It came to pass the angels were gone away from into heaven. This is the shepherds of Bethlehem. They saw the angels, and I believe what they saw was the heavenly host having sung their song and rejoiced with the shepherds. They sang all their way back to heaven, and they actually went off to heaven as a group of a heavenly choir singing beautifully. You know, it says the shepherds were absolutely amazed by what they saw and heard on that occasion. In the case of Philip in Acts chapter 8, the angel of the Lord, or the Spirit of the Lord, is definitely an angel from verse 26, caught away Philip. So Philip is picked up from the eunuch's presence and delivered 40 miles away by the angel. Again, it was good to see for the eunuch that the transaction with Philip was closed, and so the angel coming to take Philip away was important to him to know that he could now resume his journey homeward. In the case of Samson's parents, they saw the angel ascend in the flame of the altar. Again, knowing that their offering to heaven was accepted. And again, in Judges 6, the angel of Yahweh departed out of his sight. And that's one I'll leave you to work out for yourself. But again, it was important in the case of Gideon that he see the angel go. So sometimes angels didn't just automatically disappear from men's eyes. Sometimes they chose to be seen leaving. Other times, only part of an angel was seen. In Jeremiah chapter 1, Jeremiah says, Yahweh put forth his hand and touched my mouth. I wonder if you've ever thought about, when you read in the Bible, the readings about Jeremiah, that there was a hand that actually touched his mouth, and it came from the Yahweh angel. And you know, this is where we need to read our Bibles very literally, because these things actually happened. Ezekiel had experience of just a hand appearing. Behold, a hand was sent unto me. And again, in chapter 8, he put forth the form of a hand. So again, just a hand appears. So only part of the angel was seen on this vision by Ezekiel. That's repeated in Daniel chapter 5 in the Feast of Belshazzar, when there was the writing on the wall and part of the hand that wrote. So again, that hand had to be then moved away so the writing could be read. And there was an angel writing on that wall, but only the part of the hand that wrote was seen. In Daniel 10, verse 10, Daniel, coming out of his deep sleep, a hand touched me and set me upon my knees and the palms of my hands. So again, there is that resurrection of Daniel. And he says, one touched me. So again, there is this angelic hand that is often touching people and or doing the will of God or writing out messages on the wall. So sometimes only part of an angel is seen. Well, what about angels appearing as men? Well, when we come back to the record of Abraham and Lot, we come to what Paul says in Hebrews 13, right down the bottom of the particular PowerPoint. Paul said this: be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. And he's talking about Abraham and Lot, because they both received angels and fed them in their house, not knowing immediately that they were angels. Abraham, he lifted up his eyes, and behold, three men stood by him. Now, in the record, we can immediately pick them as angels because they're standing by. But Abraham didn't know that. He saw them, he ran to meet them. Typical Eastern hospitality, bowed towards the ground, made them a meal, And later on, of course, they revealed themselves who they were. And there were three distinct angels, two angels and the Yahweh angel revealing the message concerning Isaac and the destruction of Sodom. Those two angels with the Yahweh angel left the Yahweh angel with Abraham, and the other two angels came to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, bowed himself and his face towards the ground. And again, he was very conscious of what an evil city Sodom was at night, and so he wanted them off the streets and in his own house for protection. And then he said, "Tarry all night and wash your feet, and rise up early and go your ways." And they said a very strange thing to him. Now, he didn't know that they were angels. So this was like travelers that had arrived in his city. They said this to him: "Oh, no, look, it's okay. We'll abide in the street all night." You know, they don't need sleep. They would be happy and felt quite safe protecting themselves in the street at night, but they were just testing Lot out. And Lot insisted they come home. He made them a meal and he prepared them beds to lie down. And they were getting ready to go to bed. And just remember that they were getting ready to go to bed when, of course, the tumult outside the door began. And they revealed themselves as angels by smiting the men of Sodom with blindness. So, you know, angels sometimes appear just as ordinary men if that's the way they wish to be seen. Now, I'd just like to set you off on a train of thought here to think about. It is very possible that in our experience of life, as we go through life, and especially when we're trying to do the will of God, or we're trusting in God to protect us, that angels may actually appear to us and we don't recognize them as angels. They may come in the form of an ordinary person. They may be somebody that we have a confrontation with, an experience with, that we meet by chance somewhere. And I can tell you that people who've worked in the mission fields, many of them are convinced of instances where this may have happened in their life, where perhaps they felt that an angel had directed them on a particular course of action. I'll leave you to think about that, but there's no reason why that can't be the case. Some have entertained angels unawares, and while we will not have it revealed to us this side of the kingdom when that's happened, it may well happen in our lives. Well, the control they have over the minds of men, they can be seen as they wish to be seen by men, so it might be with a sword or in a chariot. Sometimes they appear as ordinary looking humans, so you know, they don't look like a whole bunch of clones that have come off the same production line. They have individual appearances and they look just like ordinary people. Sometimes they only reveal part of their body. Sometimes they appear in glory, or sometimes in a way that projects their purpose or the message they're trying to deliver. So again, angels can control the way that we perceive them and see them. In our next study, we'll come on to the capabilities of divine nature.